It's time to awaken your inner traveler and zip around the world as money is sent to the people who rely on it. This is Money Travels, presented by Visa. I'm Indre Viscontis. On today's episode, we're delving into the role that artificial intelligence can play in keeping our money movement secure. But first, here's Tendai Marabire, part of Visa's Payment Fraud Disruption Red Team. She's not part of Visa Direct's team, but she works on Visa Direct test scenarios, where she's tasked with the job of entering the mindset of bad actors.
What happens with these fraudsters is when people discover a loophole, they tend to share across all the other fraudsters. So when we get that information, we work to simulate those scenarios in the test environment. And then once you discover that there's a vulnerability, then we try and think on how we can close that loophole. So we try to be proactive and find and identify those vulnerabilities before they are exploited by fraudsters.
Welcome to Money Travels, presented by Visa. On this podcast, we follow the money as it zips around the world, enabling our fellow humans to survive and thrive. And we talk to the experts who are building the tools that will transform the next generation of money movement. Fast money movement requires fast security. As money moves more and more quickly, the technical challenges to secure the transactions grow for all parties involved. We reach a point where it's not sufficient to check every transaction as it's happening. We have to predict behavior and aim to stop fraud before it happens. And large amounts of money have already fallen into the wrong hands. Thankfully, we humans have developed computers that can help with machine learning and other artificial intelligence. But you need a pretty big data set to make accurate predictions and to track trends in fraud behavior. That's where Visa Direct's network can come in, and its long history of transactions, coupled with decades of developing AI tools that can check, monitor, and protect money movement. To get a sense of how AI is used today in money movement, we're going to talk to Michael Jabara, Vice President, Global Head of Fraud Services at Visa, Dr. Anjana Susarla, who's a professor of responsible AI at Michigan State University, and Clara Durodier, an AI strategy specialist and author of Decoding AI in Financial Services. But first, let's hear from Tendai again to help us understand the scale of the problem. Tendai Marabire is an ethical security hacker. Sometimes they're called white hat hackers because in old Western films, the good guys wore white hats. What she described at the top of the show is called penetration testing, where savvy computer specialists test the security protocols of their clients. To protect Visa's network, Tendai and her colleagues conduct baseline testing for Visa Direct transactions, and they're continuously adding new components and new scenarios as new fraud schemes are discovered in the wild.
We are always evolving because the same applies with fraudsters. They use one attack today, and tomorrow probably they know that, okay, while you're trying to fix this, they move on to finding different ways of attacking. Right now, we are not only using the traditional way of transacting, maybe just going to an ATM or point of sale, but because of the interconnectedness of the payment system, you can also go online and run transactions. And with AI coming into play, I'm not sure how that is going to be handled. So we are constantly trying to innovate and think out of the box on different fraud scenarios on what can be done and try and test vulnerabilities across all those different channels. So it's not like we just run the same cases all the time. We adjust them, we add them, what as a team we see as the best fit.
Now let's talk to Michael Jabara, Global Head of Fraud Service at Visa, to learn how Visa Direct leverages AI to comprehensively address risk. Michael Jabara, welcome to Money Travels.
Thank you for having me.
In the last year, the rest of the general public has learned how much artificial intelligence is running our lives, is involved in all the various things that we do every day. So let's start with how Visa has been using artificial intelligence.
So we have been at Visa using artificial intelligence before artificial intelligence was a thing, really looking at how we can improve the security of our global network. When you operate in over 200 countries and move almost $15 trillion of money yearly around the globe, a core part of that scale is to be able to do that in a seamless yet secure way. And artificial intelligence really gives us that superpower to be able to identify that fraudulent needle in the haystack of legitimate activity that we want consumers and businesses to engage in.
And have you seen a kind of exponential rise in the type of machine learning that you've been implementing, or has this been a kind of steady pace over the last 30 years?
Well, it certainly has accelerated because when you think about what makes artificial intelligence effective, there's two core components to it. One is around computing power, processing power, and the other one is around data and the availability of data sets that you can run through these complex models and run relatively sophisticated computations on. One of my favorite fun facts, when you think about the International Space Station that was launched in the 90s, the amount of computing power that is currently on the International Space Station is the equivalent to the computing power that you have in your iPhone today. And then on the data side, if you think about the proliferation of digital devices that we have had, everything from your mobile devices to Internet of Things devices and so forth, each one of these endpoints is generating tremendous amounts of digital information. And so when you combine the two, the level of sophistication in the models that you're building and the types of decisioning that you can create out of it becomes that much more impressive and accurate.
Before we go any further, I want to clarify what kind of AI Michael is talking about here. Artificial intelligence is a huge topic, and you can find it in many different industries, and it can be used in many different ways. So I spoke to Clara Duraudier, an AI strategy specialist and author of Decoding AI in Financial Services, to get an overview of the history and use of AI, specifically in finance. Clara Duraudier, welcome to Money Travels.
Well, thank you very much for having me. It's an absolute pleasure.
So a lot of people are just learning about AI in the last, year or so. But in the finance world, it's been a part of the work of financiers for a very long time. What is the history of AI in finance?
Well, we have started working with it, or playing with it, rather, as early as 1996. Actually, the true origin stays with a woman in England, Ada Lovelace. She wrote the first, what today would refer to, an algorithm. And over time, her name got mentioned less and less. But in our industry, in financial services, we have clear records of starting using this technology in the mid-90s. And we continued gradually to deploy it in various business models, primarily in highly sophisticated trading strategies, for instance, but also for fraud detection and to stay safe online. But what happened in 2023, the concept of artificial intelligence and generative AI entered the collective consciousness.
And of course, we should distinguish generative AI, where you have a chatbot that may or may not be hallucinating, and the way in which artificial intelligence has been used for decades that is non-generative, but rather based on machine learning or, big data sets.
By and large, in our industry, we've used predictive AI. So essentially, we stayed within the space of predictive analytics, which is a way to look data to help you do something with it. So before predictive analytics, we had diagnostic analytics, which helps you, mine the data and find answers as to what happened, why that happened. But then we moved into predictive analytics, and that's where AI, this level of, let's call it intelligence, starts to exist. So with predictive analytics, we have entered the space where with the data we have, we can answer questions like what happened and what may happen. John is going to default on his loan or not, based on the data that we have. What can we predict? Now we're getting close to autonomy in artificial intelligence, and either we call it autonomous AI or some people call it cognitive AI. So what we have now, if you imagine there's three boxes we look at. One is predictive AI, then we have generative AI, and then the third box is cognitive AI, is when the systems will be able to reason, plan, look at data and achieve that level of autonomy where they are the majority of time, if not 100% of time, reliable in their outcome.
A lot of new fintechs are entering the payment space or entering the financial transaction space to make it easier for us to exchange money and so forth. What can they gain from working with a partner like Visa that has this long history and massive data set that they can then deploy?
Well, first of all, is the data, and that's very valuable. Secondly, and I speak from experience with working with a large number of startups, and I'm coming up to a decade now, I think the structure that you find in a corporate environment, it's something which is important to draw insights from as a startup. A startup is like this wonderful, chaotic environment where ideas flow because they're not constrained by structure. And the beauty of this kind of partnerships lies in the fact that it's a win-win on both sides.
And that's why so many of these partnerships have been so successful. Okay, now let's get back to my conversation with Michael. With all of this sort of outsourcing to computers and using artificial intelligence, there also seems to be, maybe to me, more opportunities for problems, for security issues or increased risk. So tell me about those.
Yeah, absolutely. The amount of innovation and the amount of investment that we're doing in all these very cutting edge technologies is very much mirrored by what the fraudsters and the threat actors doing on their end. You know, they're also really excited about the advances that are happening on the AI side because it makes running their illicit operations that much more efficient. They're also really excited about the tremendous amount of new data that is being generated and that is being available because now they can go and create synthetic applications that they can monetize, or they have access to a wider range of usernames and passwords that they can go into and drain the funds from. So it's very much an arms race between what is happening on the security side and what is happening on the fraud and financial crime side.
So how do you and your team keep up with what's happening in the fraudster world?
So we do a whole host of intelligence gathering across multiple channels. One of the key benefits that we have at Visa, as I've mentioned, we operate in over 200 countries. And so we have a really good pulse in terms of what innovation is happening on the fraud side. You know, maybe some new scheme that was cooked up in Brazil, we quickly analyze it, dissect it, figure out what the vulnerabilities that are being exploited, and then making sure that intelligence, that information is shared globally so that a client in sub-Saharan Africa can benefit from that knowledge and not fall prey to that same scheme. Another core thing that we do is we have a lot of very smart, very dedicated intelligence analysts that are looking at the dark web, at all the chatter that these fraudsters are engaging in terms of gaps that they've discovered, kind of enterprises that they're looking to start up, that they're recruiting money mules for, and any other conversations that are occurring in these off the beaten path chat rooms and marketplaces so that we can proactively share that intelligence and then set up our defenses to make sure that it's that much harder for them to make their plans come to life.
What is a money mule?
The money mule is a network of individuals who are on the ground, who are actually picking up the money from ATM locations. So they are the physical logistics infrastructure to take the cash and then aggregate it with the criminal organization that was behind the attack.
And where does AI or machine learning fit into this picture?
So there's a few ways that we leverage that on our end, because we have this really strong feedback loop from individual consumers in terms of which transactions are legitimate and which transactions are not. So we're feeding that feedback into the model, and we're able to very granularly distinguish between this is a good transaction or this is a bad transaction.
Well, and that's one of the benefits of having such a big network that operates over a long period of time, that you can actually see those kinds of patterns, where I imagine a smaller organization or company, they can't monitor somebody for 5 years.
Yeah. And it's also about how does that profile behave over those 5 years mm-hmm. versus how a normal profile would look like. Mm. And your definition of what a baseline profile is, obviously, the more aggregate information that you can build to say, you know, this is what a normal transaction profile looks like versus this is abnormal. Do we think it's because there's something fraudulent going on or there's something nefarious going on or not? The more data elements that you pull into that, the more cases that you pull into that, the more accurate that you are. It's kind of the wisdom of the commons, right? If you bring a whole lot of different sources together and then aggregate them, they're going to be a lot more accurate than if you're just using a single point of reference.
So what happens when something does go wrong? Let's say you get a flag like that. What are the next steps for your team?
So we talk a lot about data breaches and kind of cyber intrusions and how impactful they are. If you kind of play that out to its logical end, why are they impactful? Because they can be monetized in essentially three different ways. They're usually monetized through an ACH or swift transfer. So if you think about the big Bank of Bangladesh heist that occurred a few years back now, they could be monetized through crypto purchases. We've seen a tremendous amount of that lately, especially driven with some of the nation state backed threat actors that are really active in that space. Or they can be monetized through hard cash. So you get access to an ATM network and then you get the money out and now you've got dollars that you can go and add to your bottom line if you're a fraudster. So for that reason, from a Visa perspective, we spend a tremendous amount of time monitoring the ATM network globally because we know that's one of the most attractive targets for a data breach to actually realize benefits for the threat actors behind it. So this was 2-3 weeks ago. It was a Friday night, and all big attacks happen on a Friday night because that's when people are ready for the weekend. And there's a lot of organizations that their fraud operations teams are Monday through Friday, and the fraudsters are very aware of that. So it's Friday night, and we get a call. We are seeing some odd ATM behavior that is happening in Southern Florida. And so we're able to identify what the bank that was being targeted. And then within the bank's portfolio, we were able to isolate it to a few accounts that were being used to make very suspicious and high amounts of withdrawals from the machines. And then we were able to work with the ATM operators to actually catch these perpetrators red-handed. And we were able to exchange that intelligence with law enforcement to identify these folks. They were coming in from a Latin American country. So it's an overseas crew belonging to a criminal organization. And so we were able to shut that down in a matter of minutes once we've kind of gone through all the analysis.
Are you seeing an increase in organized crime, or is it more of individual crime that seems to be on the rise?
I would say it's actually both. So what you're seeing is that you have these organized crimes that are taking advantage of this infrastructure that is now being created to generate these carding attacks or to go on ransomware campaigns. And because you have that scale that's available to you, they're more readily able to recruit individuals who want to participate in these types of activities due to economic pressures or a whole host of other reasons. And so one of the really interesting things that we have seen in our monitoring of the dark web, where you can go on these marketplaces and it's just like Amazon, you can go to these collectives that are selling ransomware toolkits, for instance, and then they'll say, you kind of have access to these assets. We're going to enter into a profit sharing agreement, 60-40. And so the commercial terms are very clear and kind of very spelled out. And then they'll say, we are not going to let you target government entities, and we're not going to let you target healthcare organizations. And when you read that at first, you're like, oh, wow, you know, these are hackers with a conscience. You know, this is like the B Corp of the ransomware world. But that's actually not the case. The reason why they're doing that is because they're a professional organization with a risk appetite. They have a risk person on their side who says, you know what? From a business perspective, going after government entities and going after healthcare organizations is bad for our business because it generates a lot of heat and it's going to result in us being shut down. And we're looking to build a sustainable, profitable, and long-term business. So we are going to stay out of that high-risk segment, and we're going to focus on going after, you know, retail and telecom and casinos and things like that.
Can you give us a story in which Visa Direct found scam and then was the hero?
So kind of one of the most interesting fraud schemes that we've come across recently is really around the B2C side of money movement. So a lot of the fraud schemes are usually around kind of ATMs or consumers making purchases of high value items. But this one was around an entity that was sending funds to an actual account, which is, you know, a little bit unusual. So essentially what happened is that, as it often starts, there were compromised identity credentials. And the compromised identity credentials were with this organization that would send reimbursements to customers. Now, this organization had credentials that were compromised. The threat actors were able to use that to access its internal systems. And what they did is that they changed the accounts of the customers who these disbursements would go to. So instead of these disbursements going to the accounts of these legitimate customers, they switched out the accounts to be ones that they controlled on their own. And then the disbursements were made to those fraudster-controlled accounts. The funds were then moved out of those accounts through peer-to-peer transfers through a digital money mule network, if you will. And so when we saw the anomalous activity that was happening, we were able to work with this organization to then kind of shut it down. And then we investigated what was the methodology, what was the gap that was exploited to make sure that it was closed out. But then the other thing that we did, because again, you know, global network, we're seeing a fraud scheme in one area, we're going to go look for it in other areas. We looked at other entities in that same business to see if credential compromises for those other entities in that same merchant category were also experiencing something similar. And lo and behold, they were. And so we proactively reached out to them as well, alerted them of the activity, and expanded the scope of the investigation to make sure that the scope of the fraud did not get bigger than what it was before. So that's kind of one of the interesting ways that we have seen a fraud scheme related to Visa Direct and how we were able to kind of identify it and then share those learnings more broadly to make sure that other customers were mitigating the impact on their end.
So talking about another tool that Visa uses, I want to learn more about the red team.
Yeah. So the concept is that we have a red team and a blue team. And so the blue team is our business as usual team. So they are the ones who are responsible for monitoring, defending, protecting the payments network. And then the red team are essentially the hooligans who are meant to find the vulnerability and exploit it and defeat the blue team.
Oh, is there like an office pool going on about like who's doing better?
Yeah, exactly. It's a little friendly competition to see what we can discover and, you know, how quickly the red team can be shut down and so forth. But essentially, the red team is a team of ethical hackers who are looking for vulnerabilities in the way that systems are set up. So they are putting on their fraudster hat and they're sending through a bunch of transactions, a whole host of activity across the ecosystem to determine how those transactions are being handled by the client. Are they being declined as they should, or are they generating an approval that shouldn't be provided? And whenever there's an approval, it means that we've identified a vulnerability and we know exactly what that vulnerability is. And we can go to that client and work with them to address it before it gets exploited out in the wild. So the tagline, which I don't think Visa Marketing has approved, but it's, you know, let Visa hack you before the hackers hack you so that you're kind of minimizing your downside risk.
So far, we've talked about many of the ways that AI can help protect us from fraud, but as with any technology, there are things we need to be careful about. When it comes to AI, one of the big issues to consider is how, despite the fact that we often perceive it as objective, after all, it's a machine, not a person, bias can still be rampant, especially if the data that it's trained on are historical and there was bias in that history. What are the big concerns now in terms of how this issue of bias is approached in the finance world as we deploy these models?
So there are two big points to unpack when it comes to bias. The first one is for us to understand that when we use AI on past data, which embeds all sorts of things, our ideas as a humanity over the course of time, AI becomes an amplifier of whatever has found in that data, the good and the bad. So as long as we appreciate that and we are aware of that, then that's a good starting point. The second idea derived from this would be to remind ourselves that in large language models, we have enough indication to date that even when data is being taken out, the model doesn't forget. So the memory still stays there of that data, and we have no control. No one seems to have any answers as yet today how to enable to erase that memory. And the bigger point to remember is that we can remove or work with the data that we have pre-generative AI, and we can work with it. We can cut out some of it and deal with all sorts of other biases. But there is one certain bias which specialists have identified that it's impossible to remove it. It's that embedded in every single data you can find. It's simply, you can't remove it. And that single bias is gender bias. Gender bias cannot be removed from the data as much as we try. And what I recommend is exceptional care to be able to manage that particular bias in a deliberate and intentional manner, because otherwise it will be impossible to have it under control.
What Clara told me about gender bias is supported by another expert we spoke to, Dr. Anjana Sasarla of Michigan State University.
There was an example of a very large company. They trained an AI model which was supposed to be used in resume screening. So when people are applying for a job, you know, you have people who screen resumes. Why don't I have artificial intelligence screening the resume? Now, one of the problems happened that this job historically was for software engineering. That means very few women were hired for those roles for historical reasons. That was maybe male dominated. Not many women went into engineering for whatever reason. So when you're training an algorithm based on historical data, you can end up replicating those biases or patterns from the past. So what this job, the resume screening algorithm was doing is it was kind of downvoting anything with women's colleges. Somebody played a sport associated with women, whereas anything to do with men was getting sort of upvoted. So being a male is almost considered a precondition, if you will. So there's ways to mitigate all these biases, but that requires a kind of self-conscious effort, if you will, that companies need to be aware. People who are making decisions in organizations need to be aware of algorithmic bias. And we as users, do we have any power in asking companies to be careful about what algorithms they're using that will affect our lives?
What advice would you give either to the consumers themselves or to the small businesses that work with some of these larger financial institutions? What should they be advocating for and how should they do that?
It's a little bit like a nutrition statement or something like that, if you will. When we are eating some food, we want a nutrition label for our food. And if you're using something that is a result of an algorithm, if you're part of a financial decision, we want a nutritional label on our algorithm, ideally. And while we cannot compel companies to sort of give a nutrition label, I think it would be great if as individuals or small businesses, we have a little bit more idea into what algorithms are companies using. Can they explain to us why they're making these decisions? What's the training data and so forth? So I think that would be really something desirable for all of us.
Okay, now let's get back to my conversation with Michael and learn how Visa Direct deals with this issue. I'm wondering if there are any instances in which Visa has had to address bias in artificial intelligence and how have you managed that?
The benefits of the data that we use to build a variety of our models is that it's used on transaction data, not account data, meaning that what we're looking at is that 16-digit code. We're looking at the merchant. We're looking at the ticket size. We're looking to see if that was in person or online. And we're modeling the behavior based on these assets. It's not looking at the age of the individual making the transaction or where they live or what their gender is or any of these other characteristics. So that gives us a different view in terms of the profile of the accounts that we are monitoring. But having said that, we constantly want to see if there is potential bias, and there's also a focus in terms of explainability, we want to be able to understand how did the model make the decisions that it's made to uncover any potential biases that we had not intended for in the original design. So this is where a strong and very robust model risk management process comes into place, where we work with a team that's set up to essentially stress test the models and look at the results, how it was built, what is the output, and look for any potential signs of that type of bias and make sure that we address them before they go into production.
Well, it's becoming pretty clear that Visa Direct is committed to staying at the forefront of all of this innovation and anticipating what comes next. So where do we go from here?
I'm excited about this new field that is emerging as generative AI cybersecurity tools. And you can see that we will be in a significantly more secure space. What I also can see, if this technology is deployed wisely, we can stay safer online without using more and more people's personal data. And actually, the systems will be able to learn how to keep us safe without invading our privacy and taking our data for granted.
I'm excited about the potential of artificial intelligence, not just in the Western societies, but parts of the world where people necessarily didn't have bank accounts, but they have cell phones with so much mobile commerce everywhere and digitization in the financial sector. I'm excited to see what new financial products, how can we get people to save money? How can we get people to invest in the stock market? I think those are all exciting applications of AI.
We have every reason to be excited that we live this kind of change. And change is good. And I'm going to ask a neuroscientist, from what I know as a sort of a long life learner in this space and trying to understand how neuroscience works together with AI in financial services, I've learned that being through change and learning new things, it enables our cognitive abilities to stay sharp. So we use our brain, so we're going to be able to, I'm not going to say stay young forever, but I think it's a really exciting space to be able to keep learning new things and stay alert cognitively.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly right. You know, the brain is an organ, just like a lot of your other organs and like your muscles, for example, where over time, even if you just use them the same way you have forever, you're going to have a slow degeneration, a slow loss of muscle mass, for example. But the minute you start learning something new or trying a new exercise, you know, you can start to build back resilience and build back that muscle. And the brain is exactly the same. You know, if we get stuck in our habits of thought, if we're not really exposing our brains to new information, they're going to, over time, slow down and deteriorate. But we have this power to generate resilience to that and give ourselves more resources later on in life.
Well, that's brilliant.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Money Travels. And thank you to our guests, Michael Jabara, Dr. Anjana Sasarla, Tendai Maribire, and Clara Durodier. If you've enjoyed this episode, please subscribe or follow the show and leave us a review so that other people can find it. Until next time, I'm Indre Viscontis, and this has been Money Travels, presented by Visa.